This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Joy wishes to advise the following program, Hide and Seek, is a show intended for an adult audience. Generally, our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
Hide and Seek.
Sit back and enjoy the ride, and enjoy the ride, and enjoy the ride, and enjoy the ride. And enjoy, and enjoy, and enjoy, and enjoy, and enjoy, and enjoy, and enjoy. And enjoy the ride.
Tonight, James, we're talking about drugs, and we're actually going to talk about why drugs work.
Yeah, that's right. Well, people use drugs to relax, to have fun, to be part of a group out of curiosity, or to escape the physical and or psychological pain.
Now, drug use is influenced by a number of factors. Most people use drugs because they want to feel better or feel different. They use drugs for the benefits, perceived or otherwise, not for the potential harm. And this applies to both legal and illegal drugs.
That's right. And there are five main types of drug use, and the most people who use drugs fit into the first two categories.
Experimental user is a person who tries the drug once or twice out of curiosity.
And the recreational user is a person who chooses to use a drug for enjoyment, particularly to enhance a mood or social occasion.
Now, the third type of user is what's called the situational user. They use the drug to cope with the demands of a particular situation. For example, people may use amphetamines to maintain their alertness or to gain energy.
An intensive user is a person who consumes a heavy amount of drugs over a short period of time and or uses continuously over a number of days or weeks.
And the final type of user is what's referred to as the dependent user. And that person is someone who becomes dependent on the drug after a prolonged or heavy use. And they feel the need to take the drug consistently in order to feel normal or in order to avoid the uncomfortable withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not uncommon for people to move between categories, and one stage does not inevitably lead to the next. Harms associated with drug use can often occur at all levels.
Joining us here on Hide and Seek is someone who is an expert in drugs. It is my great pleasure to welcome to Hide and Seek and to Joy 94.9, Dr. Daniel Beck.
Good evening.
That last name sounds familiar.
Listener, Daniel happens to be my brother. He is also a highly qualified professional and a doctor of organic chemistry, having studied at Melbourne University and then at ANU in Canberra, and then went on to continue his education and understanding of organic chemistry in Switzerland. Daniel, it's great to have you here on Hide and Seek. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Dean.
Now, organic chemist, it kind of just sounds like a glorified term for a drug dealer to me. It might be a generational thing, but that's just what it seems like.
Well, I guess I'd have to say that most guys that I know who are passionate about organic chemistry either got into it because they're passionate about drugs or they're passionate about explosives. Perhaps you could say in my case, I'm passionate about both.
Oh, well, there we go.
Just to let you in on a little family secret, Daniel, at about the age of 7, got one of those ball thrower firework things and thought only 3 of those went off out of the whole 9 in the entire cartridge. I know, I'll stick it in the barbecue and let off the rest of them. Oh. Well, he had his hand around the wrong end of the bloody thing and nearly blew his hand off. So the pyrotechnics and fireworks side of it, I can certainly vouch for. Daniel, there are three different types of drugs, and we'll go through those and get you to explain which ones fall into the categories. Drugs can be classified according to the effects that they have on the central nervous system and that the way they change how a person thinks, feels or behaves. Now, these three major classifications are depressants, stimulants and hallucinogens. Now, depressant drugs do not necessarily make a person feel depressed. Rather, they slow down the activity of the central nervous system and the messages going between the brain and the body. Depressants affect concentration and coordination. They slow down a person's ability to respond to unexpected situations. In small quantities, they can cause a person to feel more relaxed and less inhibited. In larger quantities, they may cause drowsiness, vomiting, unconsciousness, and death.
Oh, I think I know what this one is.
Drugs falling into this category include alcohol, especially gin, barbiturates and benzodiazepines. These are things such as Rohypnol, Valium, Serapax. Then you've got your other members of the category, such as cannabis, THC marijuana, GHB.
Or GBH, as it's referred
to. As it's commonly referred to. And the various opioids, which are, of course, heroin, smack, if you like, and the other related members of the family, morphine, codeine and methadone.
Then we have stimulants. Now, stimulant drugs speed up the messages going between the brain and the body, and they can make a person feel more awake, more alert, more confident and energetic.
Large quantities of stimulants can overstimulate a person, causing anxiety, panic, seizures, headaches, stomach cramps, aggression and paranoia. Prolonged and sustained use of strong stimulants can also cause these effects.
And Daniel, what type of things fall into the stimulant
category? Well, your stimulant drugs include my favourite, caffeine. And
that's what got you through uni, isn't it?
Other members of the family, such as ephedrine or your Sudafed, if you like. Nicotine, another favourite. Amphetamines, which are a large family that we'll talk about later. Cocaine and ecstasy.
And the final category is hallucinogens. Now, that's
hallucinogens.
Hallucinogens. Thank you.
See, it's a favourite hobby of organic chemists to pronounce very difficult to pronounce words.
Yes, but to get it right.
Well, yeah, check out all these words like the last ones we've just been trying to pronounce.
Hallucinogens distort a person's perception of reality. People who have taken them may see or hear things that really aren't there. And what they see may be distorted in some way, and the effects of hallucinogens can vary greatly. And these drugs include...
Yeah, hallucinogens are a very interesting family. Most of the sources are natural, coming from various different kinds of plants.
Like mushrooms?
Yes, psilocybe mushrooms, often referred to as gold tops or magic mushies. They're a classic hallucinogen. There's also things such as datura, which is a white trumpet flower that you often see growing, particularly around South Yarra and Paran in front gardens.
Long trumpet with the curly tips on the end.
That's right. Yeah. And there's another variation that's yellow with orange on the end, mm-hmm. the same shape trumpet. That's datura. That's a very strong hallucinogen.
And that's quite deadly, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say deadly. You could poison yourself if you took enough, but it's more of a very bad trip. Imagine lots of red spiders crawling all over you. Then other members of the family are your sort of more dissociative hallucinogens like ketamine, otherwise known as Special K.
Uh-huh.
That's become really popular.
It's interesting, particularly in view of the fact it was initially for...
Horse tranquilizer.
Yeah, and for big cats, lions and so on.
And knocking them out quickly.
That's right. But there are other members in this family from plants, such as mescaline or peyote cactus. And interestingly, cannabis falls into this group as well as being a depressant type.
And I guess there are amphetamines as well that are detailed as having hallucinogenic properties.
Absolutely. In particular, ecstasy is your classic hallucinogenic amphetamine.
Well, this is just the start. We're going to go in depth, if you like, into the drugs behind those three categories, the hallucinogens, the stimulants and the depressants. We will discuss what the effects these have on our bodies and why we as humans tend to gravitate towards them. Ultimately, everything else in nature that eats and sleeps and lives repels or avoids things that kill it, and yet we as humans seem to gravitate towards it. We'll be back with more on Hide and Seek in just a moment. You're with Dean Beck and James Findlay on Hide and Seek, and in Exposé After Midnight we have Dr. Daniel Beck, who is an organic chemist. He's going to talk to us about depressants. Why do people want to take depressants? Surely that makes you depressed.
I think I'm not qualified to answer that question. That's too fundamental for me. That's more you sort of, you want Jung tonight or something.
Well, depressants include the likes of heroin, cocaine.
Not cocaine.
Not cocaine?
No.
Cocaine's very much a stimulant.
I'll just put that piece of paper away. GHB or GBH, it also includes, you know, things like cannabis that is probably, apart from drugs, alcohol and cigarettes, probably the second most popular drug in society. And I have inhaled, I will let you know. I know the president didn't, but I have. And frankly, I was a stupid mess and then asleep.
Yes, and that's the mind state that many of us need to achieve. I think there's a lot of people that aren't happy with their conscious existence.
How does it work on our bodies? How do we connect to what is going on with that? Let's take cannabis, for example. There is an active ingredient.
Yes. It's interesting you ask me, how does it work on our bodies? All those compounds or drugs that we've talked about in that list of depressants could be broadly broken down into two groups. One of the groups is what I would refer to as non-specific in the way it works on our body.
What does that mean?
The other group is specific.
Right.
And it will make sense if I talk about the specific ones.
I'll shut up. Go on.
No, it's okay. The specific ones, these are things like cannabis, and you asked me about that first. Another specific one would be an opioid such as heroin. Now, these drugs actually have what we would call in science an endogenous receptor.
Not an erogenous receptor.
It's a bit like an special erogenous zone that's specially designed for that drug.
Do you mean that's the body's turn on to the drug?
That's right.
Right.
The analogy that's used in science is that a receptor is a lock. It's a specific lock. It'll only recognise a specific kind of key.
Yep.
So if you have a heroin receptor, that's a receptor that will only recognise heroin as the key.
Do we all have these receptors?
Yeah. We're born with them.
We're all born with heroin receptors.
Yeah. They're more broadly called opioid receptors. Uh-huh. And so the same lock, if you like, will receive heroin and morphine and other opioids.
That family of drugs.
That's right. Fits into that lock specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very specific lock. Now, the reason it's there, this is a mystery to a lot of people. Why would that lock be there? Well, there's actually a natural molecule that sometimes our body makes that fits into that lock and switches it on. And in the case of opioids, that's endorphins. Endorphins are actually the natural molecule designed to fit into that family of drugs.
Yeah. Right.
Endorphins, some of your listeners might have heard of before. They're what you get from heavy exercise when you feel
gym
euphoric.
Junkies.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So you might say that gym junkies are a type of smack addict.
Getting back
to those categories we were talking about before, specific and non-specific, the other ones in this list of depressants are alcohol and GHB specifically. They're the non-specific ones.
Right.
They're the ones that don't have a lock to fit into. The way they work is they go into your body, they dissolve into your cell membranes and make the cell membranes more jelly-like, essentially.
What you're suggesting is that these are, if you like, highly dispersible. They're easily diluted and ingested.
Yeah, but more than that, because every kind of drug is that. But these specific drugs like cannabis that fit into a lock actually have a very specific mechanism that we can identify.
So are we kind of saying that the non-specific ones are, like, it depends on what kind of mood you're in to how they're going to affect you?
More so, yes. Yeah. Yes, it's less predictable how they will, what symptoms they'll give you. That's one feature of them. Yes, they mess you up more. It's a little bit more messy.
Well, yeah, I suppose, because someone's mood could change, you know, so quickly.
And that is also determined by environment.
Yes.
So the people take this type of, I guess, downer, that's another word for it, to escape. They certainly don't do it to hype up. Why do we gravitate to taking more? And how is it that our bodies crave more to get the same effect?
I think you're talking about building resistance and tolerance there, and that's complex. But in the respect of non-specific drugs like alcohol, it's about how does your body get rid of that once you took it. So if you drink some alcohol, the way your body gets rid of the alcohol is via your liver, and there's an enzyme in the liver which is called liver alcohol dehydrogenase, and its job is to excrete the alcohol. It essentially converts it into vinegar so that it goes out in your pee. And the thing is, the more that alcohol that you feed to your liver, it's like a living thing, it's like a plant. If you feed alcohol to your liver, it will respond to that and it'll produce more of this enzyme, this liver alcohol dehydrogenase.
The anti-alcohol.
That's, if you like, it's like exercising your liver and it becomes stronger. Becomes capable of converting the alcohol quicker. And then next time you come and drink, the effect doesn't last as long and it's not as intense because your liver's too strong, it's too well exercised, it recognises this thing and it gets rid of it quicker.
And that's why alcoholics quite often, never appear drunk.
Yes, often, yeah. And they also have very large sort of lower belly because their liver's enlarged because it's producing so much of that enzyme. And that's just one example of how tolerance can develop. But in general, that sort of mechanism works for most drugs. Every drug has its enzyme that's responsible for getting rid of it, generally speaking. And the more that you feed to your body, the more of that enzyme your body will start to make. And that's how your tolerance builds.
That's why people take more and more most of the time.
Now, one drug that has come into the fore, particularly in the gay community in more recent years, is GHB or GBH, as it's sometimes referred to. And my first experience with coming across someone who had it was at a private party where a guy from the States was in town and he met up with some local boys. Unbeknownst to everybody else, they were having it. I had read an article in an English gay publication about this particular drug only a month before. And when he dropped, and I mean, he was fine and cheery and happy one second and down on the floor, not breathing the next, I asked the guy from the States what he had given and then promptly called the ambulance. At the time, the ambulance service had never heard of it. This is back in the mid to late 90s. And it is only that I had read this article in the English Gay Rag Attitude magazine that I was able to inform the paramedics what was going on.
Wow.
It's fairly instant. It's fairly fine, as from what I understand, from having enough and not having too much. And it is almost deadly when it's combined with alcohol.
Absolutely, I endorse that. Do not combine GHB with alcohol. It's it will mess you up and send you into a coma and potentially kill you.
And basically your body, from what I understand, shuts down.
Yes.
You go to sleep, but not only do you go to sleep, the rest of you goes to sleep. And I mean totally to sleep. It literally shuts down.
And looking at GHB with the eyes of an organic chemist, most drugs have something which is close to it in nature.
In fact, that's what organic chemists do, isn't it? They find the natural thing
and then mimic it,
yes. Synthesize it, yes. Reproduce it en masse.
Often, yes. And with GHB, there are really no things in nature very like it. Probably the closest thing might be taurine, actually, which you find
in drinks.
In Red Bull, in energy drinks. But that's still quite different. That's got an amine in it. GHB looks horrible to me, as with my eyes as an organic chemist. It looks like something that you would use to clean your engine with. It is actually used as an anti-corrosive in lead-acid batteries in motor vehicles.
Now, we often hear on some of the hyped media about chemicals like battery acid or antifreeze or whatever being in these drugs. How true is that? Is that just media hype, or is it they're talking about the same chemical compounds?
These things can be used as precursors in processes for making street drugs. Sometimes sulfuric acid's removed from lead acid batteries and so forth, and then used in, you know, kitchens to make ice and the like. It does happen, yes. These are readily available sources for those precursors, and people doing that sort of activity are, you know, doing something illegal. So they'll get those compounds wherever they can get them. And if they have to get it out of a battery from a car, they'll resort to that.
We're talking to Dr. Daniel Beck, organic chemist, and he's talking to us about drugs. We're going to come back and have a chat to him about stimulants, and that family in drugs includes crystal meth, it includes cocaine, and it includes ecstasy. You're on Joy 94.9.
And enjoy the ride. This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Hide and seek.
Sponsored by Manhouse. Manhouse.com.au.
You're on Hide and Seek with Dean Beck and James Finlay. Here in the studio is my brother, Daniel Beck, and we're talking about drugs. We're going to talk about stimulants next. And in that family of drugs, we have caffeine, we have speed, we have cocaine, ecstasy, and we have crystal methamphetamine, or ice as it's more commonly known. In 2007, methamphetamine was the fourth most commonly reported illicit drug used here in Australia over the previous 12 months. Of Australians aged 14 years or older, 6.3% had used methamphetamines at least once in their lifetime, and 2.3% had used it in the previous 12 months. Now, this particular drug is most common among young adults between 20 and 29, with 16% having used it at least once in their lifetime, 7.3% having taken the drug in the last 12 months prior. The emergence of high-purity crystalline methamphetamine, or ice, has been associated with higher levels of dependence than other forms of amphetamines, such as speed. And it is most prevalent in the gay and lesbian community. And some recent figures that I discovered regarding the use of crystal here in Australia, gay women, lesbians, and their use and injecting of drugs is higher than any other subgroup in our community. In fact, 10.8% of gay women have injected amphetamines, as opposed to 1.2% with their heterosexual counterparts. That figure I find disturbing, I find quite alarming, and something that I think our community really needs to take on board. Daniel, let's talk about stimulants, and let's talk about the way they affect our bodies.
Sure. Stimulants are a particularly interesting group. In particular, I'd like to focus on the family of amphetamines.
It's a very broad family, isn't it?
It is, because it, I don't know whether listeners know, but the other name for ecstasy is MDMA, which is an acronym, and the A in MDMA stands for amphetamine. So ecstasy is another type of amphetamine, as is ice, as is what we used to know as speed.
Now, they're pretty closely related, are they not?
Very closely related. We were talking before, too, about specific drugs and non-specific drugs. All of these amphetamines are specific drugs. They work on receptors in our body.
So these are the lock and the key things.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah.
So then you'd ask straight away, what are the natural drugs that our body produces? And they are, like the natural amphetamines are, adrenaline and dopamine particularly. There are others, but they're the ones that we're more familiar with.
I thought dopamine was a dopey.
Dopamine. It's actually not. Dopamine is a catecholamine, which is in the family of these amphetamines. There are serotonin's a very important sort of sub-member of that group also.
Now, I've actually had someone tell me before that amphetamine's actually, you know, not as bad for you to take as opposed to alcohol because it actually releases the natural toxins in your body. Are they bullshitting me?
You mean it? Do you mean it's processed? Is it more easily, or what do you mean?
No, it's that it actually releases something that you've already got in your body.
Oh, I see.
That sounds like crap to me.
Yeah. Sounds like a user.
Thank you for clarifying that.
One way or another, all of these things, they can be fun, they can be dangerous, but they're all one way or another poison.
They are all poisons to the human body.
Yes, they are.
When I draw that comparison to nature about how evolution has enabled certain animals to know that that red berry isn't for them. In fact, it'll kill them instantly, and they don't touch the red berry. Mm. Yet we go and eat the bloody thing.
Absolutely, and a classic case for that is ephedrine, which is another amphetamine. People listening might know of pseudoephedrine, which is extracted from Sudafed tablets, and then used.
Or used to be.
Yes, yeah. And then it's used to make ice, which is an amphetamine, and that's because ephedrine and pseudoephedrine have this amphetamine structure embedded in there.
Now, let's go back, for, I don't know, 30 years.
Yeah.
We had ephedrine was the main chemical used to help our colds and flus.
Hmm.
Then we realised that that was able to be made into a nasty, so we invented pseudoephedrine.
Yes.
Then we realised that could be made into a nasty, and we've taken that off the shelves.
Well, that's not exactly how it is, but I would have to get into too much detail.
Right, okay.
Really, what I was wanting to talk... But no, it's okay, but what I was wanting to talk about ephedrine was about your point about these things being poisons and coming from nature. There's a plant in southern Africa called the ephedra, which is a grass, and this is where ephedrine came from. It's where it was discovered.
This is where some organic chemist went, I can do something with that.
Yes.
And then synthesized or manufactured en masse the identical compound.
And use it for good?
Well, initially, yes.
Well, the way that this was found, the tribes that live around this ephedra grass chew on the grass.
We're having a fabulous party.
Yeah.
That's right. They chew on the grass regularly and they find they don't have to eat for long periods of time. They can run long distances.
They're very thin.
They have the perfect physique for a marathon runner and they're able to run a marathon all of a sudden.
Yes, yes.
This was observed by ethnobotanists who saw the grass being chewed, took samples back to Western countries, and then chemists were very interested in that grass, of course. So it's only a matter of time before the connection is made.
Now, the positive side, I guess, if there is one, to a lot of this is that what end up perhaps on the street is actually developed for the better of humanity. And what you're talking about is the discovery of things in nature to help us get through life, live longer, live healthier and more fulfilling lives. It's when we fuck them up and take them and use them for other purposes that they really make a mess of us.
Well, that's right. I mean, even the prescription drugs have these same attributes. There's a parameter for prescription drugs called the therapeutic window, and it's meant to be a measure of the difference between how much you have to take to get the job done that you need to get done, to get the therapy, right, and how much you would have to take to poison yourself. And hopefully that window is very wide, there's a big difference. There's
a lot of leeway.
Yeah, you do not want to have the poison dose to be very close to the therapeutic dose. But the point I'm trying to make here is that that's an instant recognition that all medicines are actually poisons.
Sure.
The difference between a medicine and a poison is the dose.
The amount of it.
Yes.
Well, I suppose because if you do overdose on medication, then you're going to die.
Yes.
Interesting, I guess, analogy or practical application of all of that is HRT therapy. That in the 70s, what the doctors prescribed was, by today's standard, massive doses of hormone replacement. We've since learnt and discovered that by using a lot less quantity, we can still achieve the same thing.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. So what's the difference then between MDMA and MDA?
Ah, well, if we could spell out the acronym for a second.
Sure.
MDMA is methylene dioxymethamphetamine. MDA is methylene dioxyamphetamine. So the difference is a methyl group. And in English, that's one carbon. One carbon atom is the difference between MDA and MDMA. That's all. So if you take MDA and you add one more carbon atom to a specific spot on its structure, you'll end up with MDMA. Suddenly you have something that's more potent, more hallucinogenic, more interesting. But it's closely related and has similar effects. Yeah.
Daniel Beck is our guest here on Hide and Seek. We'll be back to talk to him about hallucinogens. No, I've got that wrong. How do you say that again?
Hallucinogens.
Hallucinogens. Thank you.
Hallucinogens is okay. It's like potato, potato. Depends where you come from.
But before we go to the break, I just want to let you know that the estimated cost of illicit drug use throughout the Australian community in 2004-2005 was $8.2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
You're on Hide and Seek. This is Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. James Finlay and Dean Beck with you. And Daniel Beck is our guest, talking about drugs and how they affect us as humans. Now, Grant, thank you for your SMS. Grant asks, what was the cost of drug use made up of? When I referred to $8.2 billion being the cost to the Australian community in 2004-2005. Grant, the actual components of that, I'm not so sure, but what I am quoting is from the National Drugs Campaign Illicit Drug Use Leaflet that is available on the Australian Government website, and it was an extract from The Cost of Tobacco, Alcohol and Illicit Drug Abuse to Australian Society in 2004-2005, published in April of 2008. So if you want to know more about that, perhaps Google it. We're going to talk about hallucinogens. I did.
Puts his thumb up for the listeners so you couldn't see inside here.
That's reassuring. Now, hallucinogens include magic mushrooms, LSD, which was big late 60s. I think we refer to that as trips, don't we? And also, we've indicated that cannabis and ecstasy also come into this this group.
That's right. And then you've got some other natural sources like datura and mescaline, and there's a bunch of other cactuses as well.
I don't get the
desire to trip out.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well,
smiles.
How does it? Because we must be talking about brain chemistry. We're not talking about central nervous system, are we? Or are they the same thing?
It's all in our head, right?
It's all related. The brain is the control center of your central nervous system. Your central nervous system is constituted by your brain, your spinal cord, and all the nerves that run down and
off that
control things. Yeah. So when we're talking about CNS drugs, we're talking about drugs which go into that and change things. And all three of these categories fit in. But hallucinogens are probably some of the most direct in acting just on your CNS. The depressants particularly alcohol, GHB, are very messy. We've talked about that. The stimulants, they can have specific switches which they turn on, but those switches aren't just in your CNS. Some of them are around your heart and your circulatory system. With the hallucinogens, the switches are in your brain, and they're only in your brain.
Right. So when you say the key and lock system for the likes of amphetamines that will, I guess, stimulate adrenaline, they could be more associated with, say, heart or with
lungs.
Yes,
I think that might be the case, although we're still coming to grips with a lot of the details of mechanisms and how these things work. But I think that is what's going on there, that your amphetamines, they'll both act on the central nervous system and on some of your other organs, whereas the hallucinogens tend to just go into your central nervous system and affect your brain.
Now, if this key and lock system in your brain unlocks by taking one of these drugs, does that mean it's permanently unlocked? Is there a chance that you... I mean, we talk about psychotic episodes where people just snap and then that's it for them. They're never the same after.
The thing with hallucinogens is the actual way that individuals respond to them. It's one of the least predictable groups of drugs. Qualitatively, it's predictable. Straight away, you can say, well, you know, I've got a rough idea what's going to happen to this person if they take some LSD. But the quantity of the response and the consequences of the response are unpredictable.
And vary dramatically from person to person.
Absolutely.
Daniel, thank you very much for joining us on Hide and Seek. Thank you for sharing your knowledge on some of these things that really create great impact on today's society. They are very prevalent throughout the community, and I think it's important that we talk about them so that we have a greater understanding of what they do and how they do it.
Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Daniel Beck, my brother and doctor of organic chemistry, has been our guest here on Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Sponsored by Manhouse. Manhouse.com.au.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.